You'll have to excuse me. I really don't know how to talk into a recorder, but anyways, I got my little daughter to let her borrow. I wanted to borrow her radio, and she had to show me how to set it up and everything. And so, as promised, I thought I would talk to you a little bit about what I remember and what happened at Anfu. Naturally, I have very, very good memories and fond memories of Anfu. I can't remember the exact day that I did get into Anfu, but I remember that I was flown in from Mak Wah right into Anfu. We landed right by the dispensary, and I remember looking at Anfu and noticing how quiet and tranquil it was. But everything was laid out real, real good. And there was an old man that came and visited. He came right up to me, and he, after everybody explained to him that I was the new boxing and everything, he took my bags to the little room that I used to have in the back where I used to sleep in a dispensary. And when I went into that big long building, which was my dispensary there, I was really amazed on how nice and neat everything was set up. I had just replaced Torito, and I remember how I was saying to myself, wow, this guy was really neat and everything, and he left something really good for me. And so I was really it was really nice to see how nice everything was set up. Everything was clean. And then I was taken inside to where the kitchen area was, and there was a cook there. I can't remember her name, and everything was set up real nice. And then we had a lunch, and the lunch was absolutely superb, and so weren't the rest of them that we had over there. Anyways, I soon began to understand what Anfu was all about and all the Wah House. Right after I got there, I kind of remember a lot of the things that were going on. There was a lot of action up around where we used to go for I can't remember the outpost, but we used to have to travel and go up there. It took about an hour by boat, and I was always really, really scared going up there. Luckily, I can never remember any incidences where some soldiers, American soldiers, got ambushed up there, because we always used to take maybe six or seven of those motorboats, those flatbed boats with the 35 or 40 horsepower engines in the back, and we used to go on up there. And I was amazed at the way that little tributaries used to run off to the Basak. And we used to go on up there to that little camp, and I can't remember what it was, the name of the camp, but I always was scared going up there. But in a way, I was scared, but in another way, we were right in the middle of all the Wah House and everything, and I felt kind of secured. Anyways, I kind of enjoyed going up to those places one week at a time, because I really used to be able to get to do my job. For an example, almost every day, we were always going on med calves, and I used to get one of the Vietnamese medics, and we used to go out on our little patrols and go to the village, two of the three of the villages down there, and we used to treat just all sorts of people. And I remember the boats being just laden down with all of our equipment and medical equipment, because I knew I used to dispense a lot of equipment. As a matter of fact, on the equipment, I remember that our budget at that time, we were allowed 800 pounds of equipment that I could order, not monetary value, but pound value, 800 pounds of medical equipment for my CIDG companies, which were, I think we had five or six companies at that time of Wah House, and I could also order 800 pounds of medical supply for my MedCaps alone. So needless to say, I went real heavily on my antibiotics, I went real heavily on my soaps, and my 2x2s and those kinds of things to treat the normal everyday things that you see. The most of the time when I went to the village, I always used to bring a lot of piperazine, which was a drug to control ascariasis. And I don't know if you remember this or not, but I do certainly remember this in my mind. But going to little villages and seeing the kids throwing up big long white worms and also defecating at the same time those long white worms, and they were just completely infested with ascariasis or roundworms. And the reason why they all were is because, of course, they never wore any shoes, and not wearing any shoes, the little parasites or the spores used to get up in the cracks of their feet if they had a cut, and that's how they were introduced into their body, and also from the drinking water and the things that they ate too. So ascariasis was very endemic in all that area all around here. Let's see. Oh, I used to treat a lot of head sores. Lots and lots of head sores. And the reason why is because they used poor hygiene techniques and used to wash in that dirty Bassac River, and they didn't use any soap. And usually when we use soap on their head, and I told the mother to come back in 2 or 3 days and gave her a cake of soap just to see how the kid was doing, it usually cleared it right up. It was like miracles. So I really used to get something really good out of that. Also, every single kid that I saw, I always gave him 2 tablespoons or 2 teaspoons or whatever his weight condition was of piperazine citrate. So I feel that I had I eradicated a lot of worms in our area. The kids, they seemed to live with that, and they could live with it, but they certainly felt a lot better. Let's see, that's when we were up there in the camp. Of course, at night, I was always scared in that little camp because it was always at one time there was only 2 Americans. And it was a lot of times I used to go up with Johnson, the radio operator, and that other black guy, I think he was a radio operator. And of course, Master Sergeant Barnes, who was a team sergeant, I remember going up with him a lot. And I remember it was a kind of an intriguing place to go to because we only had one company there, and the village was real close, and we were only about a mile or so away from the Cambodian border, so we were always scared. And the North Vietnamese regiment, I forget what regiment, they were always around there. While I was up there, we only received a few artillery mortar rounds from the North Vietnamese a few times, and it really wasn't that bad. But I remember a few times when I was at An Phu, and there was some other people from our team up there, and they received a lot more than what we did. But the time that I was there, I don't remember actually having a real heavy enemy action up there. There was some before I came there. There was a lot of action up there, and I remember you guys had a big victory party. You had sent your soldiers out there from An Phu, and you kind of caught them in a pincer. They attacked at night, but end result was you kicked their damn asses, and you captured a lot of weapons. There was a lot of dead bodies. The Wahaos did suffer some casualties, but not that many. As a matter of fact, I do have some pictures of General Quang inspecting some of the weapons that you had captured and so forth and so on. But I was not actually involved in that. You asked me to think back a little bit about what was happening as far as the North Vietnamese coming during that period, and I can remember the intelligence reports, and I can remember supporting the other camps up there with our 4.2 mortar for light at night and so forth and so on, and also for AG, but I don't remember being working inside Hanfu a lot of the things that was going on. Of course, you had your office there with Colonel Foy, and a lot of the things that was going on in the camp, a lot of times, and you sort of kept us, you know, you didn't really let us know what was going on all the time. I just remember just working every day, getting up early in the morning washing up and having breakfast, and then having sick call immediately after breakfast and seeing maybe between 50 to 100 people, and then rounding all the nurses up, the village nurses, and Chet the medic, I don't know if you remember him, and we used to go down the river either in boats or in deuce and a halves of 3/4-ton trucks, and setting up in a little village and treating all the people, then coming back and having lunch, and then maybe having a little park time in the afternoon, and then having sick call again for the civilians in the afternoon, mostly the dependents. They used to bring their dependents into the camp, and I used to treat them, and also some of the civilians. I remember one civilian I told you over the phone, he had his hand or his arm blown right off with a 155, and what happened was that it was a lousy surgery by the Vietnamese and all that, and they just let him go. And then he used to always come into our camp, and I used to have to try to make his wound better, because you could just actually, when you remove the bandage from his shoulder, you could see the joint where his shoulder or his arm, humerus, the upper portion of his arm, supposed to fit into his shoulder joint. That's how big the hole was, and it was festering with a lot of gangrene sort of type smelling stuff. And I used to always load him up with penicillin and streptomycin, and I even got to the point where I used to open up my sulfur. I had some old sulfur drugs and streptomycin, and I used to just kind of pour it in there just so it would stem the smell in the rotten meat kind of stench in there. It was really pitiful. Even though, as cruel as it seems, the kind of treatment that I was giving him, not only was I feeding him a lot with penicillin in his butt, like about 2.2 million units of penicillin, you know, every other day or whatever, it was far, far more what a Vietnamese hospital would have given him in Chow Duck. And I used to always feel sorry for that poor old man that used to come into the dispensary, and there was not a whole hell of a lot that I could do for him except keep him loaded up with penicillin and kind of talk to him and make him feel better. But anyways, I did feel good about that. So another incident that came into my mind also when I first got there, and that was right before I got there, I heard that there was a village down in Basak, and the NVA was coming around here, and the Vietnamese supported them with 155. I don't know where they were positioned, but anyways, they shot a few rounds there, and one of the rounds was too short, and it landed by a village, and it killed one person. Well, it just so happened that it killed, I forget what it was a male or a female or whatever. It actually decapitated the guy or the gal, and they couldn't find a head. And it was a real big incident. They didn't want to do anything because you were friends with Colonel Foy, who was with the Wahaos and so forth and so on. And they really didn't care. You know, they knew it was an error and all this other stuff. But the only thing they wanted to find the head, and that's what they were pissed off about, because they couldn't bury the body without the head. Not an incident. I remember one time, and I can't remember when, but boy, they came in the Vietnamese old-type helicopters, the Marine-type helicopters. I mean, these were old. There was about five or six of them that landed in our backyard, and they dropped off more casualties than I ever seen in a whole lifetime. All I did was stick in a bunch of IVs in there and patch them up and everything. Luckily, we were in contact with some other American helicopters, and they came in there and they took all the wounded people out, and they brought them on over to I think an Australian hospital. Let's see. I remember one time I was working in a dispensary, and they brought in a Vietnamese from one of our camps that was setting up a booby trap. And what they used to do is set these, I don't know if you remember or not, the hand grenades came in those round cardboard containers, and they used to kind of pull a hand grenade out and then remove the pin and stick and hold the pin in place and then stick the pin back into the round cardboard container and then set up a booby trap. Well, unfortunately, the booby trap or the pin fell out or something, and the guy didn't get away, and it completely blew off. It blew a hole in his chest about the size of a number 10 can, blew out half of his brain and face, and it blew off his wrist, left wrist, and his whole right hand and arm. And they brought him into me in a poncho, and they expected, you know, they wanted me to do miracles, but the guy was dead instantly, of course. And that's the first time that I'd ever seen a young Spec 5, that I'd ever seen anything so horrible in all my life. And I said, oh my God, I said, you know, hope these guys don't think that I'm going to revive this guy, you know. So that was kind of a scary thing. Let's see, I remember, what else do I remember about Ian Fu? Let me look at my picture here. I have my album in front of me. I also wrote some things down here too. The hand grenade incident. Oh, the suction one. The suction thing, I think I told you over the phone with it, that one night, late at night, somebody, they had brought that woman in that was really, really sick with a lot of fever, and we took her temperature and everything. I think it was Hill Gardner or something, his name, and we couldn't figure out what was wrong, and then he started asking questions, and he felt her breast, and it was very, very hot, and then when he asked her, he said, does your baby, you know, suck your tits? And she said, no, salam. And so he started squeezing her breast, and the milk just started pouring out. And every time he'd do that, she went, oh, like really good, you know. So he just kept on squeezing them, and he was just actually milking her like he would a cow. And she was being more and more relieved. And then he had the suction machine by hand, and he put it on both of her breasts, and then he loaded her up with penicillin and everything and started an IV on her and gave her something to sleep that night. Of course, her baby was with her and her husband, and the next morning her fever was almost eradicated, and they were so happy and everything. And so that was a real nice thing to do that happened in our camp also, that I'll never forget. Also, I always remember we had a lot of people that down right in the village of Ian Fu, we had the village health workers. They always used to come over to me for supplies and everything like that. And I really didn't want to get involved in delivering babies. And naturally, I knew when they come and see me, that was bad news. And I remember one time they had came and seen me, and it was a breech baby. And naturally, I got all shook up and everything. But we got her we got transportation for her in a boat to go to Chow Duck, and they took care of her, because I certainly didn't want to take the chance of killing the baby, and or you know the woman. So we made arrangements, and she was evac'd. Let's see. Oh, I have a note here, the shitter incident. I remember after I'd gone there 3 or 4 times to that little outpost on the Cambodian border, if you remember correctly, all the villagers and all those people that were out in the outpost, they, when they needed to go out and take a shit, they used to just go outside the camp and go anywhere they wanted to. If they didn't have one of those pools where they used to go out and shit and the fish used to eat them, well, they used to just go outside and go anywhere. So you said, hey, we're going to build toilets for them. So you gave us all the materials. We got the wood. We got all that stuff and the carpenter from the village. We got a lot of funds. We had a lot of funds from the Impress funds and everything. You got the cement and all that. So we got a bunch of civilians out there, and we paid them. They dug a big, big hole, and the carpenters built up a thing. We made 2 American size, one shithead with one shitter, one outhouse with 2 shitters in it. And we built with Western style toilets. Well, naturally, the Vietnamese, they squat, right? So the first few Vietnamese that squatted, they missed and got out their feces all over the toilet seat. And so they started stinking and drinking in the flies and everything. So they just, the hell with it, they just went outside and they did it all over again. So everything that we did was in vain. And I was kind of mad about that and everything. So I remember that a lot. Let's see, what else do I remember about the good old Basak? The Basak, I remember, used to every year during the dry season, it was you were very, very lucky if you could get a boat down a river. So there was a lot of time for sometimes 2 and 3 weeks. We had to wait till it rained till we could get in the boat and go down to Chow Duck to receive our mail. Of course, you know, receiving our mail at that time was a real big, big treat for everybody, and also receiving the Stars and Stripes. So everybody wanted to keep up with the news and their famous and their favorite baseball team or whatever. So that was I always remember saying, "Let's go down, you know, let's go get the mail." And they always used to say, "Well, the river isn't high enough because it was all sand." And I remember about that. A lot of the people I don't remember. I remember some of the interpreters that you said. I remember some of the names that you said. But I remember all the little things that happened in the camp. I remember Sergeant Fox, who one night we were all playing pinochle, and he got so loaded. You being a strict disciplinarian, you wouldn't let anybody get drunk. You said that anybody could have a few beers, even during the day, you could have a beer every once in a while, as long as you didn't get drunk. But when Fox came to us, everybody suspected that he was sort of an alcoholic anyways. And what had happened, he got into my pure alcohol. I don't know if you remember that. And he started mixing it with grapefruit juice, and he really, really got stiff one night. And that night, we had an incident at one of the outposts, and it was about 2 o'clock in the morning, and everybody woke up and everything to lend fire support for the mortar and stuff, and they couldn't even get Fox up because he was so damn drunk. And so the next morning, you fired him, and he was on his way the next day. I never knew where the hell he went after that, and that's when we got Barnes. I remember when we got the new medics, big tall medic that replaced me, and he was going to be the, no, not the medic, he was a weapons man, and I have a picture of him too. He was, he was a weapons man, and he was going to be with the regional forces. Turned it into the regional forces, and there was a captain that replaced you that was an optometrist, I think, or a hearing specialist, something like that. He replaced you, and it was a 91 Charlie from Fort Bragg, North Carolina, Womack. He was kind of, I think he was a staff sergeant, and he was kind of chunky, and he had pockmarked face, wore glasses, and he was replacing me. He was a 91 Charlie. So we were on, we were right there on the verge of turning over the cab to them. Geez, I can't think of a lot of other things, Dan. I just wanted to tell you that I hope you can understand all this gobbledygook. I can't talk to a damn tape recorder. Hopefully that what I told you just now, you will bring back some memories, and maybe you could insert some of them into your book. And by the way, I really do hope that you have success with your book, and I'm really looking forward to reading it. And I'm also looking forward to see you in July. Me and my wife will be going up. We've already have our reservations and everything. We're going to be going to Worcester. We'll leave our car there in Worcester, and we're going to fly to Washington. And not only am I looking forward to seeing you, but I have a lot of other memories from Panama that other people that I called up and everything are going to be there. So it's going to be kind of a nice reunion for me. Hey, Dan, I just played the tape over again. I remember a few more little incidences as I was listening to that. And like I was talking, I do sound like real crazy in that damn tape. I can't talk to a damn tape machine, that's for sure. But there are some other incidences that I do remember, and I'm just going to kind of go over them. By the way, I think this is a 60-minute tape, which is 30 minutes on one side and 30 on the other, or whatever, or 15 minutes on one and 15. If I run out, just flip it on over. I remember going up to that outpost up there, and I was real, real sick one time, and this is kind of a interesting thing for me anyways, and I don't know how come I ever forgot about it, but anyways, you guys had brought me back by the boat, and I had headaches so bad that I wanted to die. I mean, they were really killing me, and so I was in the dispensary and everything, and that medevac helicopter came for me, and then they brought me up to a little an American hospital somewhere along by Saigon. And everybody looked at me and they said, you got dengue fever. And I said, no, I got malaria. And they said, well, how do you know that? And I said, because I know, I'm a medic, I got malaria. And they all laughed at me and everything and said, no, you got dengue fever. Well, of course, they did a little pinprick on me and they did a blood test on me right away. And they came back and they were amazed. I did have malaria, but what really threw them out, I had falciparum-type malaria. Naturally, they medevaced me right away to the Third Field Hospital in Saigon, and I don't know if you remember this. This was in June, somewhere in the middle of June or something. And I went in there, and they did another physical on me and everything and took more blood. And the first thing you know, I was one of the hostesses of the mostesses or whatever, because I was the first American in 1966, actually the first American in Vietnam, they claimed, that had falciparum-type malaria. All the other medics or all the other Americans had Vivax malaria, but I had falciparum malaria, and that was the killer malaria. That was the black water fever malaria. Naturally, everybody in the Walter Reed team that was in that Third Field Hospital and everybody, all the staff, was very, very concerned about where I had been and everything. Naturally, I'd only been around Anh Phu and up to that camp and everything, so they wanted to know all my everyday moves. And the reason, of course, was that since we were being in the 4th Corps, they were just moving the 9th Division down there, and they wanted to know about it. Anyways, they treated me with some new drugs and everything, and I got squared away. I think I spent a total of one whole month in the hospital. The guy spent one week in intensive care unit. And by the way, I was real skinny at that time. I think I was 132 pounds. And when I got out of the hospital and came back up to the team, I was 116 pounds. And I was 26 years old, so you can imagine how skinny I was. But I wanted to bring that. Maybe that'll stem some memories. Also, I remember about the operations that we used to go on. Holy mackerel. I remember we used to